Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Well, let's see, what comes into your head when you think of film music? I mean, is it the score, a found song used in a famous scene, or maybe it's an original song penned specifically for that movie? Well, films like Easy Rider and, say, Scorpio Rising popularised the use of found music. Some directors have an urge to work with musicians they admire without all of the context and the baggage that found music can carry. Well, sometimes the filmmaker may get rejected and have to opt for their second choice, but even these scenarios have produced some truly memorable songs that have become even bigger than the film itself. So what are the best original songs written specifically for films is the question I'm asking. 51552 is our text, and DJ and broadcaster Kate Brennan-Harding is on the line now to fill us in. So Kate, welcome to the programme.
What's Hi, Dave.
First on your list? I mean, you know, 51552, as I say, I'm sure you won't get them all. So where do you start?
Well, I tell you what, I told my best friend that I was doing this yesterday, and she sent me a load of songs that we haven't included. There's going to be a rake of people texting in, I'd imagine. But I think we have to start with 1961's Breakfast at Tiffany's. You can't get more classic than that. Audrey Hepburn singing the track by Henry Mancini, and I think the scene itself is iconic. For anyone that hasn't seen it, she's sitting at this window sort of against, you know, a fire escape, and she starts singing this very melancholy song, and she's beautiful, and it's just very kind of innocent but just so kind of worldly as well. I love it anyway, and I haven't actually watched that movie in ages, so I'm going to go home and watch that maybe tomorrow.
Do you know, I saw it about 7 or 8 or 9 years ago. There's a nasty streak through it all.
It's kind of odd,
you know. Like as just you've described this bit. Shouldn't I play a bit of
but
this?
But this bit is special.
Ooh, river. Wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday.
The guitar looks the sounds though could do a bit with a bit of tuning. Anyway, okay, let's move on.
But I think that's part of the charm.
I know,
it got covered. That track's been covered by so many people as well. R.E.M., Eartha Kitt, like it's just, you know, kind of legendary.
Sounds like a demo. I like it already. Not the current sound of auto tuning and all the rest. Okay, so where are we going after that? That's 1961. We're talking to Kate Brennan-Harding. 51552. Songs written for movies, right?
Well, let's go to 1967. Mrs. Robinson, The Graduate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an absolute classic. It's
absolutely, by the Lemonheads, love it.
I knew you were going to say that. Simon and Garfunkel. I mean, yeah. I think true fans of Simon and Garfunkel would be like, "All right, okay." And actually, you know the way I was on with you recently talking about a sellout. Paul Simon originally didn't want to create this song. He was like, "Oh, you know, I think I'd be a sellout." But he liked the idea for The Graduate, and when he was approached, or when they were both approached. The film had already been edited, it had already been created, it just hadn't put the score to it yet. So they were under serious pressure to get this song written. And if you watch the movie, or if you have like the original soundtrack, the song's not finished. The song got finished 3 months after with the correct wording and everything. And it's kind of two songs spliced in one, Paul Simon has spoken about before. But Mike Nichols was, I think, genius move bringing in Simon and Garfunkel. And the song, as it's, you know, it's more iconic, I think, than The Graduate. But I mean, that might be just because of my age.
I'd sit down and argue that one, I'll tell you. You're trying to seduce me, Mrs. Robinson is the big, well, actually the big line in the movie is just one word, plastics. But anyway, here goes.
And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey.
One of the greatest of all American songwriters. And in fact, the big moment in the movie is the crucifix in the door, which shocked an awful lot of people towards the end. But anyway, Mrs. Robinson it is, The Graduate, 1967. Now where are you going?
Okay, well, we'll go to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Now, this is a movie that has never really, I don't know, I never really got it, but I've never been a Western kind of fan anyway. From 1969, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, which is performed by Hal David and written by Burt Bacharach. Written by Hal David and Burt Bacharach and performed by BJ Thomas.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't really know too much about BJ Thomas, but I know that he also sang Hooked on a Feeling.
I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah, but if you do movie music maths, or where my brain goes to, that track was then covered by Blue Sweet and featured in Guardians of the Galaxy, which I think was a great soundtrack,
right.
Just to, as an aside.
Yeah, that's the kind of music that was in Guardians of the Galaxy, wasn't it? It's like from that all that era and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, Burt Bacharach was prolific, and he had... he'd approached Chris Christopherson and Bob Dylan to sing the track, and both of them, I'm doing inverted commas here in the Galway studio, they were both otherwise engaged. But Thomas decided, yeah, he stepped up, and I don't think Bacharach was too pleased with him, because they went through a lot of takes and they couldn't get it right. And actually in the film, in the original film, Thomas had laryngitis, so you hear a kind of huskier version in the film than what's released when the single was released when the movie came out.
Yeah, a lot of people like this whole scene in the movie where they're on the bicycle and all that, and like the two guys in love with the one girl kind of thing, and I just thought, what's it doing?
No,
in here?
I don't.
You know,
yeah.
It was a great movie, but anyway, here it goes, right?
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head. They keep.
So, Kate, we are talking about songs that were written for movies,
and
I'm just wondering how, like, people sat down and said, "Let's write a song for this movie we have, which is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which is kind of a cool, kind of almost comedy western, and like it was just very good." And then, like, who decides? I know. How about this song? Because, like, at a meeting of people around a table, it just doesn't fit.
Well, it doesn't fit. And, like, you know, that's why anybody who, you know, sort of, you know, the younger generation or anyone who hasn't seen it, you'd be like, why? Why is that song in a western? It doesn't make sense. It's just much more kind of kitsch, I think. But I suppose the movie, for me, the movie's kind of kitsch. So then when you see the movie, if you go back and watch it, you'd be like, oh, okay, it does actually fit into it, you know?
All right, good enough. Raindrops keep falling on my head. And as you say, BJ Thomas, who I would have known nothing about, that's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Hal David and Burt Bacharach. Now where are you going? You're going to, oh, I know where you're going, Bob Dylan, isn't it?
I am going to Bob Dylan, and I actually love this. Knocking on Heaven's Door. It's from the film Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, which is a western that I actually have enjoyed, because I wouldn't have, as I said, enjoyed the genre too much. But written and performed by Bob Dylan, and the scene that it's used in, I actually watched it again this morning, not the movie because I didn't have time, but I watched the scene, and the scene is absolutely amazing. It's, you know, your typical western shootout. They arrive and they're kind of like, there's guns blazing and they're hiding, and there's an older sheriff in the movie, and he gets shot, fatally wounded, and he's sitting there and he's just realizing that, well, this is it, you know. And it's actually done so well. It's not over dramatic. It's just, it's very beautiful, poignant scene, where it's just kind of looking at someone going, oh, okay, this is it, I'm knocking on heaven's door. And I think it's a really kind of good example of how music and film really elevate each other, do you know?
And again, like, this was specifically written for this movie, you know?
Absolutely, right, yeah, completely.
Okay. All right, here goes.
Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
Bob Dylan, knocking on heaven's door. Here's one here. 8 Mile. Says 51552, Eminem. All the tracks, indeed. Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
But you're not going to 8 Mile next, are you?
No, but we will. We'll probably get there. Right. But then again, you and me tend to run out of time, maybe because I waffle too much. But I just going back to Knocking on Heaven's Door, like, I love actually the Clapton version of that too. That might be sacrilege, but I do love it. Staying Alive. Let's go to Staying Alive, where you know, Saturday Night Fever, and I'm a massive Bee Gees fan.
Yeah, that's probably the ultimate example, isn't it? That they wrote these movies, I mean, songs for a movie, is it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, it's just sensational. And like the movie itself, you know, when they were approached by Robert Stigwood, who would go on to become their manager. He wasn't their manager yet. And the movie originally was, you know, okay, we have a movie, it's about Discomania. Didn't have a title yet, and you know, the Bee Gees were asked to kind of like, okay, write this for us. So I believe they were recording it in France, because at the time it was kind of good for tax purposes. But anyway, the film executives, they wanted to call the album Saturday Night, and the Bee Gees were like, no, because there was loads of kind of stuff, songs out at the time that had the word Saturday in the title. So it was called Night Fever, and then the movie executives changed the name of the movie to Saturday Night Fever. So that's kind of cool as well, you know, the influence that they had. And this scene, the opening scene, Travolta is walking down through New York, and he is, oh my God, he's mesmerizing. I remember watching that movie. I was too young to have watched it. It was on, I think I was homesick, and it was on earlier in the day, I watched it on my own. I think I might have been 9 or 10, but I was already in love with disco, and this, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to grow up and just.
Had he got a tin of paint in his hand, or was he going to buy a tin of paint?
So he was going back. So his dad owned a paint shop,
yeah,
and he was going somewhere else to go because they were out of this particular paint that this upper class kind of woman wanted. Mm. So he was going to get paint, but at the time, so he had to walk across town, and he's just got the strut, and like, you know, the movie for me is just absolutely mesmerizing as well. But the strut, Travolta at his best, I think. And then he comes back into the paint shop, and he has to go back in, and he's like, oh, I've got this for you. And he pretends he's giving the woman a deal while she had to wait a half an hour. So he's like a smooth charmer as well. But the song, I mean, I think I was talking to Graham, who works in the show. He was like, you know, imagine, you know, anybody has put this in their headphones and sort of strutted down the street. And I have certainly done that, and I was blasting it on the way over here in the car. It's such a tune. I love it.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that one. All right, that's from 1977, Saturday Night Fever. This is from 1980. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5 it is, Dolly Parton. Tell me about that one, Kate.
Oh, well, Jane Fonda, she approached Dolly Parton to write the first time to be in a movie. And Dolly was like, yeah, okay, but I'm writing the song. So she wrote the song 9 to 5. And it, do you know that, I mean, everybody kind of knows that, but there's loads of people who haven't. Her acrylic nails are what made the beat at the start, because she realised, she'd go around tapping and she realised it sounded like the typewriter.
I didn't know that.
Did you not? You did know that.
About her acrylic nails. No, I didn't.
Well, she stole the show, and the song is, you know, I think the song is actually more iconic than the movie as well, because it's one of those ones.
Big karaoke.
Yeah, but I get asked DJing. It's like I could be doing a techno set, and someone could come up and ask for like 9 to 5. It's kind of bonkers. But will we go to the next one, Dave?
Yeah.
Will we go to Call Me American Gigolo, 1980.
Oh yeah.
The year I was born.
That's Debbie.
It's Debbie Harry and the iconic Giorgio Moroder, who is like, oh my God, I think he's just the godfather of electronic music. Mm. So Blondie were approached by Giorgio Moroder to write this, to write the lyrics. So Debbie Harry was approached. Originally, it had been Stevie Nicks that Moroder had gone after, but she wasn't available. And Blondie were just so successful at the time. And kind of this kind of gave Debbie Harry, I think, an opportunity to sort of stretch herself a little bit as well. So Moroder had composed all the music for this. And originally, the song was supposed to be called Man Machine, because let's remember, it's about American Gigolo, which Richard Gere, he's an escort. It's, you know, it's quite a special movie in a lot of ways, and it kind of made him the sex symbol that he is today. And certainly combining him with the vocals of Debbie Harry and getting Call Me is just magic.
And what would happen in a situation like the ones you're talking about? I mean, like, does Debbie Harry get to see the script or get to see the movie or before it comes out?
Well, actually, she got to see her inspiration for this, because the movie had been edited. So the opening sequence of this film is where Richard Gere is sitting in this really cool car and he's going across country. And she took that as her inspiration to write the song.
By Debbie Harry and Giorgio Moroder, that's Call Me from American Gigolo.
It is. And what about, what do you think of when you think of Eye of the Tiger from Rocky 3?
Whatever. Gosh, you know, that's not something I probably wouldn't have got that right. Is this Rocky 3, is it? I wouldn't know it was number 3, yeah, right.
To be honest, like, I probably wouldn't have put the number on it, but like, yeah. But I would have always said Rocky, so Survivor. Yeah. And it's another one, you know, you said earlier, it's about like, you know, a lot of film directors or film producers were going to musicians and they were getting turned down by their first and second choices. And this is another example of that. Because originally, the Sylvester Stallone had actually gone to Queen and he wanted to use Another One Bites the Dust, which Queen turned down. They were like, no, you're not using it. And so he went to the writers, well, the people in Survivor, who are Jim Petrick and Frankie Sullivan, and they actually synchronized the beats, the guitar beats and the drum with Rocky's jabs in the movie. So it wouldn't have happened if Queen hadn't said no.
Wow. Really is about as 80s as you can get.
Oh
isn't
my
it?
God! You immediately picture big hair and people kind of on the dance floor doing big air
shoulder
guitars.
Pads. Yeah, here's a few here. Streets of Philadelphia by Bruce Springsteen for the movie Philadelphia.
Brilliant.
Absolutely, it is indeed. Yeah, best music for a film was also by Giorgio Moroder. Chase for Midnight Express. Indeed.
Oh
Norman
yeah.
Bray. Very good. Yeah.
That's so, brilliant. Well, okay. Well, 1985, Simple Minds. Okay, Jim Kerr. He is given a song that he doesn't actually want to have.
Well,
originally.
Yeah, they always wrote their own stuff, and they didn't write this, and it was their biggest hit.
Exactly. But the thing is, basically, they were passed over. So Chrissie Hynde and Annie Lennox were approached, and
so was what do you call him, Brian Ferry, and he said no as well.
I know, and actually, it would have been a real smooth song with Ferry. I'm a massive Brian Ferry fan. But Simple Minds frontman Jim Kerr, he said, okay, fine, I will record it, because the rest of the band were like, this is going to help us out in America. And they kind of went with it, so they did.
Yeah, and at the time, there was so much, I remember there was so much, what do you call it, focus on music. They were actually number one in America while Live Aid was happening in America.
Oh, wow, I didn't know
that. Here it is. Okay, passing the mid-80s, where are you going? That's, by the way, of course, Breakfast Club. Is the movie, Don't You Forget About Me, yeah.
I know I was there going, I never said the name of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
Danger Zone. I actually really don't like this song. I've
Danger Zone?
It. Yeah, from Top Gun.
Oh,
1986.
Is that what it's called, is it? I'll probably know when I hear
Highway
it.
Highway to the Danger Zones, yeah, by Joji Moroder, who I love.
Yeah,
but yeah,
Kenny Loggins or something, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly, right, yeah. And... oh, I don't know. It's kind of it's so cliched 80s. It's so like the bass of it, the Moroder element, I think, is kind of cool. But the vocals of it are not very. I'm just, I suppose, not really for me. But it's an ultra macho movie, and it's an ultra macho kind of yuppie-ish soundtrack, and it comes directly from Top Gun, and it's so recognisable.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you with 100% of what you just said. Oh my gosh, that's the kind of 80s sound now that should be buried.
It makes me instantly angry.
Say that again?
It makes me instantly kind of angry.
Just terrible
like,
stuff, you know. It could have been Toto or anything else, you know.
Exactly.
Oreo Speedwagon. Anyway, so where are we going that might be better?
Okay, well, this is definitely better. This is Fight the Power from Do the Right Thing.
Yeah,
and
right.
Like, this is iconic.
Public
we talked about it. Yeah, we talked about it before when I was talking about samples. But Chuck D was approached by Spike Lee and asked, would he collaborate for the film? And it's... You know, the film is an iconic tale of simmering racial tension in New York City. And this, isn't it really a theme song? It's an absolute anthem and a call to action, and it's Public Enemy completely delivered it.
I think Rolling Stone magazine recently did its 1,000 greatest songs of all time. So, I mean, this was either 1, 2, or 3. I can't remember. It was certainly
I think it was number
3.
Two.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Here's a bit. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Hey! Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power! 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 We got to fight the power! End of the 80s into the 90s, Fight the Power. It was, what do you call it, Fear of a Black Planet was the album. Do the Right Thing is the movie we're talking about there, and that's Public Enemy. Now let's get into the 90s. Where do you go with that?
All right, well, it was mentioned earlier by a listener, Gangster's Paradise, Dangerous Minds.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, I think it's another example of using a Stevie Wonder sample from, you know, Pastime Paradise is absolutely brilliant. The movie features Michelle Pfeiffer, and she's, you know, going into an inner city kids, and they're all very troubled, and there's a lot of trouble going on. And she's there trying to, you know, get them away from gang culture. And I love the movie, but I was about 15 when the movie came out. But this song definitely surpasses the movie for me. And it's performed by Coolio, and it's absolutely brilliant. I'm the kind of G the little homies wanna be like, on my knees in the night, saying prayers in the streetlight. Been spending most of the nights living in the desert, paradise.
Okay, 51552 is our text. There's another one there. It says Philadelphia by Neil Young. Who Made Who by AC/DC from Stephen King film Maximum Overdrive. Don't know it.
I don't know it.
Very good. Okay, so you're staying with 95, are you? With
I am. How did you know that? No, yeah. I'm joking. It's You Got a Friend in Me, Toy Story. And I feel like this song feels like it's older than 1995, personally. But he wrote and recorded this for a Pixar movie, Toy Story, and it's become the theme song for the franchise.
Yeah, the first Pixar, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, the first Toy Story. But it's been in every other Toy Story, and it is definitely the theme song. And it's an enduring friendship of Woody and the boy, Andy. And Newman had said back in 2017 that he asked for adjectives basically, what do you want me to write? And they said friendly and comforting, so he took them seriously. And it was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Original Song, but it didn't win. Pocahontas' Colours of the Wind won instead.
I think the Newman family have won more Oscars than just about anybody else, more than maybe the Disney family, because he's got all aunties and uncles and things that have won for music and everything. Here goes.
Got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you've got a friend in me.
Yeah, like Paul Simon earlier on, Randy Newman, one of the American greats, no question. But he's coming in to play actually a couple of gigs at Vicar Street a couple of days before Patrick's Day in just a few months' time. So that's from Toy Story, and you say 1, 2, and 3, and 4, is it from the lot of them?
Yeah, it's the general kind of theme song for the whole franchise. Yeah. Now, we have to move to, I think, what is probably one of my favourite soundtracks, Romeo and Juliet soundtrack. Oh. And most of that album, I bought that on tape back in the 90s, and it was brilliant. It featured Mundy, it had Garbage, it had The Cardigans, it was the Bare Naked Surfers. It was absolutely brilliant. But exit music for a film, Baz Luhrmann, who produced and directed Romeo and Juliet, and it was like such a different take on Shakespeare, really, and it was now, as we know, Luhrmann's kind of signature. He went to Radiohead and he's like, look, do what you like. I'd like a song, and I'd like it to have these themes. So exit music for a film was created, and it's like he basically gave them free rein. Obviously, the album, it featured on the album OK Computer,
which came later.
It came later in 1997. This was specifically written and giving Radiohead just, you know, carte blanche, really, go and do what you would like. And it captures the absolute the fatality, literally. And it's the closing sequence in Romeo and Juliet. If anyone hasn't seen that Baz Luhrmann one, some people don't like it. I loved it. I loved the colour. I loved how it brought everything into kind of the modern world. But this song is amazing.
I'm not sure I actually saw the movie. I can't remember anything
really?
About it. I probably didn't see it. Here, I'll play
Leonardo
this.
DiCaprio.
Yeah, I know.
Wake from your sleep. The drying of your tears today. We escape.
So 96, Romeo and Juliet, exit music for a film is the full title of it. Tom York, Johnny Greenwood, the whole lot of them frankly wrote it. That's Radiohead, then it was on the OK Computer albums. Let's get up to this century. Where do we go in 2000?
Well, we're going to the century, but you know what we haven't haven't mentioned, and I'm getting to get into trouble, but a Dirty Dancing soundtrack or Jaws, there's loads of great stuff.
And those songs written for specifically the movie in Dirty Dancing, were they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But let's go to 2000 and Independent Woman Part 1, Charlie's Angels. So Charlie's Angels went from, you know, 1970s, 90 days TV show into this brand
new... Is that Destiny's Child? No, it's not, is it? Who's Independent? Oh, it is, right, okay.
It is, yeah, it's Destiny's Child.
Charlie's Angels, right.
And it was I was about to say the modern take on Charlie's Angels, but it's 21 years old and I'm feeling my age all of a sudden. I remember when the movie came out, it was cool. But this song, you know, totally, like, even now if you still play it, it is an absolute floor filler. Beyonce, who wrote it, was one of the writers. And
It's just like, just if you play a bit last of it now, you get people, I'm sure, in cars going, yeah, I'm ready, I'm powerful.
It's
I'm
a floor fill. I'm amazed you didn't say it's a pop banger. I know it, no question about it, but if you said, what's the name of that song, I wouldn't have known the name of it. I wouldn't
would
have known.
Well, no.
Independent Women Part 1, is that what it's called? Yeah,
but I guarantee you most women would know it's Independent Women.
All right.
I think as well, though, like Dave, it's from soundtracks. Soundtracks, I think, for me, have kind of changed in terms of, I think up to about 2005, 2006, there was, soundtracks were brilliant. Go out and buy them as full albums because
well,
they were like...
one of my favourite albums is from a movie and it's soundtrack. It's entirely 100% written by the actors, every single song. And it's one of my favourite movies of all time. And the whole thing is country music, which is kind of weird, which
cool.
is Nashville. Which is from 100 years ago. It was a brilliant movie and the songs are fantastic. They're so funny. Anyway, let's move on because we're still in the year 2000. Yeah.
Soundtracks, I'd love them to kind of get back into them being as important as they were. Now it's just kind of about the single, I think. But anyway, let's go to 2001. Mad World, Donnie Darko. Okay, this I know because people would be like, that was not written for the movie, but it was changed so much by Gary Jules and it became Christmas number one and it was just beautiful. So I think you could, there is a case for saying this is completely reinterpreted for the movie and it captures the eeriness and the strangeness of Donnie Darko.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, did your man from Tears for Fears, no maybe not, did he write that? No. I
yes,
know.
He did. Tears for Fears did the original.
Oh, really?
And it was
oh,
featured right. synthesizers and heavy percussion and I actually don't like the original at all.
Oh, right.
But Gary Jules
Roland
Orzabal,
yeah.
Jules did this real stripped down kind of version and it's so haunting and does remind me of Christmas anyway, you know, maybe that's my age, but it's definitely one that can slip in there under the kind of a different rule.
And very well known, Gary Jules.
And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. The people run in circles, it's a very, very...
Back to the lab again, yo. This old Rhapsody better go capture this moment and hope it don't do it. Lose yourself in the music, the moment you own it. You better never let it go. You only get one shot, do not miss your chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime. You better lose yourself in the music, the moment you own it. You better never.
Okay, we had that one mentioned earlier as well. The first one there is Mad World, of course, from Donnie Darko. And then Eminem, Lose Yourself. What's the last one? Just one more, if you had one more.
One more. Okay, well, it's Shallow, A Star Is Born.
Oh, yeah, that was written for the movie, definitely. Yeah,
that was written specifically by Lady Gaga, and Mark Ronson had a huge hand in that. Bradley Cooper asked Lady Gaga to take part. Now, Shallow is, and A Star Is Born 2018, both of them hugely successful, and Shallow going on to obviously win the Oscar that year as well. It's not for me. I don't really like the song or the movie.
And of course, Bradley Cooper performs this as well. It's not just Lady Gaga.
He does with Lady Gaga, but she wrote it. And she wrote it with, as I said, with Mark Ronson.
Okay, I'll give it a whack here.
Go on, give it a blast.
Yeah, okay. Listen, thanks, Kate. Good luck.
Thank
Take it easy.
You.
And thanks a million for being. How's Galway? Good, great, glad to hear it.
Okay. Christmas of us, where they
killed us. We're far from the shallow now. In the
I'm with Kate on that. Seriously?
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.